Hi, I'm Lisa McEwen.
And I'm Lisa Anita Wagner. And together, we are...
She's Gotta Have It! Exclamation mark! For little turns. Hello and welcome to another episode of
She's Gotta Have It!
Exclamation mark. I think that is the first time we said it in exact unison. I'm very proud of us.
Me too.
Good job. Today we are talking about season one, episode 9 of Californication. It doesn't say on your screen grab here, but it is an episode entitled Filthy Lucre, which we looked up just now and discovered that that means dirty money. And the description is, after the funeral of Hank's father, Hank comes back to L.A. with his new manuscript that he wants Karen to read. After receiving a bonus paycheck, he buys a new car for himself and a guitar for Becca. And also some other stuff happens. Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff happens in this episode.
Lots of stuff.
And we will get to that. But for now, it's what we want.
Bow.
Well, you know what we need? We need, like, a kind of, like, electric guitar sound. I feel like that's actually what we need
what
there.
What we need, sure.
Like,
I can
a kind
totes.
Of, like, just, like, a flourish.
All right. I will find us an electric guitar flourish.
All right. Why don't you start? Because I feel like you look excited again.
I do. I actually have another... I know what it is that I want this time. I guess I will start with a little preface, as we've talked about a little bit. I was never a makeup-y person, but in high school and in different times of my life, I sometimes would dye my hair temporary bright colors. Mm-hmm. But with brown hair, it always was like you could only really see purple in the sun and stuff. But there is now this new product that's like color for dark hair. I guess they just make it better now. So I think I'm going to get an overtone color of purple. And you can really kind of see it. It still washes out in 6 to 8 washes, and my hair doesn't hold color, so it won't be really permanent. But I'm just excited that this, because of new hair dye technology, I don't have to like bleach my hair or do anything, but I can just get a little bit of cool, yeah, bright color. And then the thing I like, I'm finally getting grays in enough like chunks, and they will be bright. So it makes grays like the bright color.
Yeah.
So I think I want to, it's a bit pricey, but I think I'm going to start with some Christmas money and get the amethyst purple. And then later on I might get indigo blue.
All right.
So yeah, it just feels kind of exciting. And like I do my nails and my hair. Those are two places that I feel like I do some more traditional female expression sometimes.
Yeah. Interesting. I'm excited to see that. I myself am getting my hair dyed a darker color in a week and a half. Yes, that's right. While I have enjoyed being blonde, I am ready to have dark brown hair because I've always been in the middle. And this isn't even what I want. This is just me being like, also, here's my thing.
Perfect.
been blonde for the past 3 years now, and it ended up looking way better than I thought. And
it looks amazing, and
thanks.
I look at you all the time with it, but it looks real.
Yeah,
like it just looks so real on you that I was surprised, and it's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually keep running into people who either I've mostly known in the last 3 years or have just forgotten that I used to have different colored hair because everyone's so used to me with this color now. My hair is actually a kind of ash blonde, what often comes off in the winter, for example, as mousy brown. It's a boring kind of brown, and I'm actually going quite gray at this point. But when I was younger, I'm sure my mother will have her own version of this story, but I was never allowed to dye my hair. And so it wasn't until my 30s that I was like, oh, I can just dye my hair. It didn't occur to me that I was like, I just was doing other things in my 20s. I'd forgotten about it. And then it was actually after my dad died and after I had a devastating breakup that I really needed to just, like...
switch it up.
I was like, fuck it. I want a Tilda Swinton
haircut.
That's
what I remember. It was Tilda Swinton inspired.
It was Tilda Swinton inspired, which is part of the reason I went blonde first. But I've also wanted to go on to the extreme of either end, right? Because I was so many years just sort of in the middle with this sort of, like, ash browny, blondy hair. And so now I'm ready to go dark brown, and I'm interested to see if there's any like difference in how people treat me, because although I think blondes do get more attention than I got before anyway. I'm wondering if people are going to take me more seriously with dark brown hair. This is just a hypothesis I have. I don't know. My mother has mentioned that since she has gone gray hair from blonde, she dyed her hair blonde for many, many years. But ever since her cancer diagnosis and then her hair fell out and it grew back kind of gray and curly. And it's kind of gone back to its normal texture now, but she hasn't dyed it since then. In part because I think her scalp was too sensitive. She thinks she gets treated with more respect. And I find that really interesting. It's just interesting how, like, small aesthetic changes just changes how the world treats you.
Yeah, it's interesting. Actually, I feel like if I have purple hair with, like, my gray's purple, I probably will get a slightly different experience as well. Yeah, interesting.
Okay, but what do I want?
What do you want?
I feel like Christmas just happened, so it's hard to kind of say exactly what I want. I mean, I'm in this space where I kind of just have basically everything I want right now. Dear listeners, I have decided that I'm going to defend my dissertation in a few months. And so I got offered another small academic job and I had to turn it down because I really just need to take the next few months for myself. And I've got some personal trips that I'm taking as well. And I'm just so excited to just have a routine and be able to get up and work on my dissertation and do yoga and then, like, read for hours and just, and, like, then see my friends and, like, you know, write theater reviews on the side and stuff and clean my apartment. I'm so excited to keep cleaning my apartment because now I have so much more time to do that. And it is such a kind of labor because sitting down for long periods of time and going through papers and, like, kind of hunching over is something that I find very hard on my body, and I find it difficult to do that for a sustained amount of time. So it is the kind of thing where I just need to do it a little bit every day, and that just fell to the wayside this semester because I was doing comedy shows and I was doing conference presentations and I was submitting new chapters of my dissertation, and I was also waiting at Ryerson for a course. So it just, all my time was taken up, and I'm really excited to just have more time for myself and just really take advantage of that. And I think the only other thing that I do need to get, and I will enjoy once I have it, but I find buying new technology stressful. My mother promised me an e-reader for my birthday, which was 6 months ago, and I still haven't bought it. And I know that that will make traveling so much easier for me because I won't have to bring, like, a bunch of books. And there's always a bunch of things I need to read, and it's going to be so much easier if I just have a fucking e-reader.
Is everything available for e-readers?
Not everything, but a lot of stuff is. And I have to say, and I think this is common amongst academics, that I really love reading paper copies of things.
Yeah, me too.
I do prefer that. But when I'm traveling, I would also rather have a bunch of stuff on one tablet than be dragging around a bunch of stuff that I don't need to. And because I have a bunch of trips coming up and because I will not be able to stop and take breaks from my dissertation during those trips, it'll be easier for me and my load. So I know that that will make a big difference in my life, and I'm excited about having it. I hate the process of going to get it. I have irrational fears around buying new technology. So that is some insight into me. But yeah.
Nice, yeah. Well, it sounds like you want more ease to your days and some lighter carrying.
Yes, that is a very succinct way of saying all of what I just said. Good job.
All right, now we'll get on to Hank and Runkle and the gang.
Filthy Lucre.
Filthy Lucre.
Initial thoughts.
Yeah. I feel like compared to other episodes recently, so much happened. Mm-hmm. I'm extra excited because I don't remember what transpires with the very last moment.
Oh, I remember. You but remember? I'm not going to tell you. Yeah. You mean of this season?
Of this episode where the transcript that was the single version of what the new book that Hank wrote.
Manuscript.
When, we believe as the audience that it's completely missing. And then it turns out that
Mia
has made a copy, and then she just has, like, looks like she's got a plan in her head again.
Oh, you don't remember what happens? Oh.
I don't remember what happens with this next book, this next chunk of the story around this manuscript. Okay. So I guess I'm still very intrigued by her and her storyline now that I like her better this time.
I won't spoil it for you.
Yeah.
It's good. Things get intense.
I'm still not watching this show, even though now I have the capability and to just keep it spread out. Mm-hmm. I like it.
Me too.
Yeah. What about you? What are your initial thoughts?
Well, a lot happens in this episode, but it is kind of a bit... I mean, so unlike I Love Dick, which was so tight and so focused around themes. It's not as though this episode doesn't have themes going on. It does, but it's just a bit spread out in terms of the plot advancement and the character development and the character's relationship development, because we have Hank, who comes back with a single manuscript he's typed on a fucking typewriter and an engagement ring for Karen. And I think those things are linked, because I think that is, like, Hank's old-timey romanticism. Because as much as I love the character Hank, it is a little delusional that he and Karen slept together and that he thinks now suddenly that that means that they're getting back together. He leaps a few steps on his own there, and he doesn't realize that he has to... He's assumed she's coming with him in a way that he should not assume.
Yeah.
And I'm not... That always sort of baffles me about his character, because it says a lot, I think. But also it says a lot that he has gone very old school, because he does have sort of old-timey romantic ideas about being a writer and what that looks like. So he's written this manuscript on a typewriter, and so he has one copy, which you and I both said, like, you know, these days.
Oh my god, one, yeah.
Seems bananas. And that actually sets... So Hank is basically setting himself up in this episode for a lot of failure.
Yeah.
And also, it's what kind of magically opens the door for Mia to kind of wheedle her way into the plot here, and for future plot developments, which will be very dramatic and exciting. And we have, you know, I think I said this in the past, but, you know, as much as Hank is often telling Harry what a weirdo he's being, and to, like, stop deciding things without his wife and to talk to her, Hank just comes back. He, like, grabs Karen and he kisses her. And she's, like, in a way that, like, I do not read as creepy. Like, a lot of what he's doing, like, the fact that he's keeps with the come-ons and Karen keeps being like, okay, stop. I don't read that as creepy because of their past dynamic and the comfort level they have with each other. But Karen is frustrated in a way that Hank does not really register.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way that I think we, the audience, are supposed to see him not register, because he's sort of still high on his
successive writing.
Yeah.
And it seems too, like, that seemed like the first time that she said she wouldn't read his first thing. I got the sense that they've been doing that since the beginning.
Yeah.
And I think he was probably really excited for that. It was palpable for the connection that he thought they were going to have about the writing.
And for a reflection from her, I mean, just thinking about the female gaze, like, that he needs a reflection from her before it feels real to him.
Yeah. Yeah, he really was, the way you put it, he's really set up for failure in this episode with his one copy and a wedding ring. It is interesting, too, how he seems like such a little, like, he's just such a hanger-oner. Like, first he goes home with them from the airport,
because
Karen says, clearly, I'm not here to pick you up, but... and then not only with the drive, like, he goes back into their house, and I know there's the Becca thing, but he's just so cheeky. Like, he's just always pushing in and always like, hi, I'm here, and then he's, like, eating with them. Like, he just sort of seems like... in a very comical way, like, just like your worst nightmare. And for Karen, because it looks like he's going to at any time say that they had sex. Like, he's so unreliable for that kind of stuff. Yeah.
And at one point when he and Becca are in the guitar shop and Becca's sort of nodding her head towards the father, who's obviously having financial troubles, and he's got his daughter with him and he's trying to sell his guitar, and she's like, you know, hey, what about this? And he's like, well, we don't want to meddle in other people's affairs. And she's like, that's interesting, coming from the most intrusive man I know. It feels really apt that she makes that comment, especially given his behavior in this episode. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's such a button pusher, but in that way that you can know that in the past it's worked with Karen, because we even saw it in previous episodes. Like, he kind of push and push and push, and she would giggle and flirt.
And she still was a bit at the
beginning. Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, by the end of the episode, she's, like, had it up to here with him, and she... I have to say that Natasha McElhone is a good actress, but I don't love that scene. That's actually one of my least favorite scenes, where she's saying, like, she has a teary voice, but her face looks in no way like she's actually upset. Did you notice that?
When she's kind of saying to Hank, you're not, like, we're not doing this anymore kind of thing?
Well, when she's saying, like, I'm in love with Bill and I really need you to respect that. And her voice, like, shakes and she runs into the house, but it's like her face is not saying the things that her voice is saying.
Well, I sort of read that as because I don't think she really actually loves Bill. Like, yeah. She's kind of loving away from Hank, but...
Yeah. I also have a theory that that actress got Botox at some point and doesn't move her forehead anymore.
Oh.
And I think that that actually majorly impacts her ability to emote.
Now I'm going to check that out.
Yep. That's my theory. But I don't want to cast aspersions on Natasha McElhone, who is beautiful and talented. And I've seen her in loads of things. She's a very good actress. So yeah. It strikes me as just odd that I find it weird that she doesn't seem to actually be emoting. It's a theory we can come back to at a later date. And, you know, it's LA and actresses are totally encouraged to get shit like that done and way, way more extreme
sometimes
stuff all the time. So
it even goes along with, like, if they want the job, they've got to have stuff done. So, no, I totally know that.
Yeah. So this is not to diss Natasha McElhone, but only just to say that I find it a bit strange that she doesn't move her forehead.
Yeah, I did have a sort of slightly strange feeling about that whole dynamic of her pushing Hank away more and him just being more intrusive. Again, mm-hmm. I didn't remember it from before. Mm-hmm. And I know as an audience, you're kind of like still rooting for Hank because you're not really rooting for Bill. Do you know what I mean? So it makes an interesting audience dynamic where you're kind of like rooting for everybody in a weird way, I find a little bit. But it did seem like more than other times, he really wasn't listening. And I think he was sort of playing that, like, that card deliberately, mm-hmm. thinking it was going to work.
And assuming that she was going to do the kind of automatic intellectual labor that she's done for him in the past, during times where they have been in a relationship. Like, I don't think he's written anything since they broke up.
Yeah.
So this is the first time where he has something and he still expects a level of engagement from her that I think she understandably feels resentful about.
Yeah. Yeah, I never thought about that. It's like more labor for her to do, whether she wants to or not, is what he was expecting.
And just the way that he is sort of presuming she'll do it, that he's presuming a kind of enthusiasm on her part and a kind of attachment and interest.
That's true, because he doesn't presume too much about other women, like that he's entitled to them or anything. Yeah, that's interesting.
And I think that also... I mean, the other part of it might be that Karen is interested and she's sort of wrestling with herself a bit during that time because she knows that she does have feelings for Hank and she's trying to she feels really guilty about that and so she doesn't want to engage with his work because, I mean, she's also said this maybe in episodes so far, but also future episodes for sure, that reading his work is part of what made her fall in love with him. And so I think she is also worried. She's feeling probably a little bit like Hank's being presumptuous, but also that if she reads it, then...
She'll fall for him again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And just even the scene with Hank being cheeky again, like, he's literally sitting there while Bill is, like, what, 20 feet away doing dishes? And then brings up them having sex again. But he's like that bad little boy, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's just, like, pushing and pushing to get... Seems like he even will get Karen in trouble so that it doesn't work out so that he can have her. Do you know what I mean? Like, in the bad little boy world.
Yeah, exactly. Because he doesn't really care if Bill finds out that they slept together, because then that will cause conflict between Karen and Bill. Which is good for Hank.
Yeah, it's interesting. This does seem like the least Hank-like that he's been, but I guess when people get really jealous about, like, love, that's when they choose weird things, because he seems so... desperate.
I think it's also like, I mean, I've talked about this before, but I think it's also a part of his character only in relation to Karen. And it's because he's got this fixation on her that he then sort of doesn't have an investment in all these other women and is able to kind of engage with them in a sort of like where the stakes just feel really low. And that's actually really appealing a lot as a woman when somebody isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas Karen is experiencing that kind of, like, presumptuousness that, I mean, and that is not something that makes me feel good, for sure.
And then I'm assuming that, because I remember Karen saying to Mia, you can't read it. So Mia just stole it and copied it while it was in the house.
Yeah.
And the other thing I saw earlier, Hank, earlier in the episode, when Hank opened the envelope with the check, I'm assuming that was another check from the Hollywood movie. So he gets these enormous checks, right?
Yeah.
That even seemed archaic. I was like, a check in the mail. Like, I know it still happens sometimes, but and I know that was a bunch of years ago, but one copy check in the mail. What?
Hey, man, until recently, I still got checks in the mail from the publication I write for.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, until very recently, and then we went to direct debit. Yeah.
I guess that's true. I guess last year I was still getting, like, from performance jobs, sometimes I would get a check from an
But yeah, direct debit does seem to be much more
the way forward.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what else is going on in this episode?
So, Harry... Wait, no, I keep calling him Harry. His name is Charlie.
Charlie Robinson. Oh, my God. I was actually, at one point, I was like, and then I forgot, because I'm kind of foggy and I forgot, and I was like, Harry.
It's because his name, that actor plays Harry in Sex and the City. Oh. That's why. I can't believe that. Sorry, listeners, in case you were very confused, when I say Harry, I mean Charlie.
Means Charlie. Runkle and his wife.
And Marcy, who now we, in retrospect, knows from the beginning of the episode that Charlie's been cheating on her. And that's the subtext of all of their interactions. I don't know if you noticed that. But when, yeah, she was saying the thing about going to book club, and he's like, I thought you hated book club. And she's like, well, when you commit to something, you should commit to it. And like, oh, yeah, she knows something. And then at the end of the episode, we find out that she and Danny are now having their own secret slash not so secret affair.
Yeah.
And Charlie is blindsided and unamused by that, in a way that I don't certainly have a lot of sympathy for him. But as Marcy's walking up the stairs, she's screaming, "Let's rock out with our cocks out!" He's like, "I don't want to rock out with my cock out." So their positions have been reversed, because suddenly now Charlie's interested in being monogamous again, and Marcy's angry and
has the interest of,
yeah,
what's the other girl's name?
Danny,
that's, yeah, right.
And then at the end, it's also clear that Danny is going to leverage all of this to, because I think, does Charlie try and fire her, or he says something that sounds threatening, and she's like, oh, I don't think you'll be firing me, I think it's time for me to move to a new desk.
Yeah, yeah. I think he actually said you're fired directly. And then she, yeah. Yeah, he really kind of lost all of his marbles there. Charlie Runkle.
And now these two women that he's been involved with are involved with each other in a way that seems karmic.
Yeah.
Which will take them down on a kind of dramatic and interesting path.
But he was super stoked that Hank, I was calling him Frank. Let's just call him all different stuff.
Frank and Harry.
Hank Frank. And Harry Charlie.
The listeners are just like, what's happening?
Yeah, Charlie was really excited about Hank's book. Like, it is cool to see how people are really, yeah, just excited for him to put another larger scale thing out. And I'm so curious about it now.
And the other thing, I don't know if you picked up on this, but he's written about his
affair with Mia.
Yeah. Yeah. His unwittingly bedding an underage girl.
I feel like I remembered that. I feel like I have seen episodes of this, and it's interesting to now put all the specifics together.
Mm-hmm. So again, yeah, a lot of little things happen. It's like pushing the plot forward in ways where, yeah. And then it ends with Hank losing his manuscript because he's being robbed in his car.
And his car, yeah. It's funny because that car just, like, I preferred his other car too. It looked more retro, and this looks like a dick car. So it seemed also kind of like poetic justice that it looked like within 10 minutes of driving his dick car around.
Yeah.
He got, carjacked. Or is that the right term? But taken away from him.
Yeah.
With the manuscript. I just noticed that it seemed like both Charlie and him really did feel like they, like, lost a lot of stuff really quickly.
Yes, yeah.
Because I think he thought he was going to have this new thing, have this experience with Karen, possibly win her back, and then all of a sudden he's got no car. He believes there's no manuscript at all, but we do find out that Mia has copied one.
And his hopes for Karen are dashed because she cries at him. And breathes smoke in his face, and then runs into the kitchen to cry to Bill.
And hugs Bill. I wonder what she went in and said. Because it did look like she went in and hugged him kind of desperately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And I picture Bill listening really hard, trying to hear what they're saying while he's drying the dishes. Because like, that would be weird. And, like, Hank is, like, hunched near. Like, you know how Hank doesn't help the situation? He's doing it deliberately. But he's, hunched so close, and it looks like they're secretly talking.
Yeah. I'm excited to watch more eps, because I know it's coming, and I'm excited to see your reactions to things.
Yeah.
Just seen this show so many times.
So, yeah, it's interesting. I guess it feels like, so there's that switch. So Hank and, oh my God, now it's Harry in my head. Hank and Charlie.
Sorry.
They flipped Like, they felt like they sort of both lost status. Yeah. And then
Danny and Marcy and Mia all
gain status. Gained
something. Yeah.
And then Karen, same pixie dream lady, just in the middle.
Exactly. Just being kind of waffly and indecisive.
But this episode, there's a definite quick status shift, or at least perceived, because again, Hank is not going to have actually lost the manuscript. But I actually felt, as an artist, I felt so devastated when, and he didn't know until the very last scene that there was another copy.
I would say that that's still a loss. But yeah. I want to give away too much of what's coming, but it's still a loss for him. But yeah, it's a real gain for Mia and Danny and Marcy. Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that, how the men really fall and the women really kind of rise in this particular
episode. That felt like so much stuff happened really quick.
Yeah.
But now that we're talking through it, it wasn't really that much stuff.
Mm-hmm. Again, like a lot of little things. Yeah. They kind of represent bigger moments, like the engagement ring and the manuscript and the car and Becca's guitar and just the way he blows through that money. Like, oh my God, that is not my relationship to money. Like, if I get a lot of money like that, I'm like, okay, I'm going to put half of it away and invest it. I come from people who are good conservative saver people.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
it seems also like, I mean, I feel like he's that way in general, but don't you think it's even more that he's kind of throwing it around because it's the Hollywood money, right?
It's the Hollywood money, and also because he's feeling reckless, I think. He's feeling a bit arrogant and reckless just in this moment where he's a bit high from his sex with Karen and from his writing.
Writing, yeah. Because that would feel like he finally got some nutrition after years being a writer.
Yeah.
Like being able to write.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It is interesting. So the three ladies, their status goes up. And actually right at the end, I feel like Mia's status really goes up because now I'm so curious about her and what she's going to do. And just even that look on her face of like, she's got a plan.
It's a great look. It's a great character.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's really all there is to say until next time. We get to, I think, episode 10.
10. And how many are in a season?
12.
12.
Excellent. Yeah, so three more episodes before
this season, and we'll take a bit of a.
Well, then we're gonna have another guest on, and do some other, like more
the special episodes about a press conference that I went to around Ontario Disability, which we'll bring to you. Yeah, it'll be cool to see whether we do more Californication or then maybe do something else for a bit, just you and I guess we'll figure that out.
Yeah,
because I'm now so intrigued, I feel like I kind of want to keep going, but it would be cool to do a little bit of something else with you and I as well.
So
it'd be cool to figure that out.
All right.
Yay.
Well, until next time, listeners, thanks for tuning in,
and
now that we've said it,
we gotta get it.
Woot. 4 little turns.